Welcome to Critical Conversations in Transportation Planning, where we bring you a series of interviews with pioneers and industry leaders who are offering their insights into some of the most challenging issues facing our field. This podcast is produced by American Planning Association's Transportation Planning Division. The Transportation Planning Division facilitates the exchange of knowledge to efficiently move people and goods, shape urban form, enhance economic vitality, and improve the quality of life.
I'm Divya Gandhi, a transportation planner and a member of the Transportation Planning Division's Executive Board of Directors.
And I'm Dr. M. Hall, an urban planning consultant and member of the TPD Board of Directors. In this episode, we speak with Jackie Grimshaw and Nina Itamudia from the Center for Neighborhood Technology in Chicago. We truly enjoyed this conversation. Let's get right into it. Jackie, we'll start with you.
Okay.
So tell us a bit about what you do at the Center for Neighborhood Technology, also known as CNT, past and present. How has this work kept you engaged over the decades?
I multitask, as I did today coming here. But my work at CNT is really around transportation. I started the practice of the CNT's practice in transportation right after ICE, the federal transportation legislation, was passed back in 1991. And one of the things that intrigued me about that piece of legislation was the fact that it mandated, you understand, citizen participation in the transportation planning process. And that was a particular interest to me because I lived through the construction of the Dan Ryan Expressway. And it happened without us in the community knowing what the heck was they were doing, why they were doing it. Well, just my classmates were disappearing, didn't know why they were disappearing, but they were being moved out of the neighborhood. And, you know, it always bothered me is that why didn't we know? You know, why was our neighborhood being destroyed? So I really wanted to focus in on making sure that people were engaged in these transportation decision planning processes. So I started there. And of course, when you do transportation, there are other externalities like the air quality. And so the folks that I organized around transportation, some of them were interested in what was the quality of the air. So then we came to transportation air quality project, and it just kept going and going after that, right? So you get transportation, you get air quality, and then of course you move into community development. You know, all of those things are intersectional, and you can't do very well with one without focusing on the other. So that's what I do. I do transportation. I don't do as much air quality as I used to, although, you know, we do have a climate program at CNT, and our transportation director, you know, is our climate expert, so I let her take the lead. But, you know, the work that I'm doing right now in Springfield also includes the air quality portion. You know, again, the externalities from transportation. And right now with climate change, you know, it's a big deal. So, you know, I've focused from there and got into more community development. In fact, CNT, you know, kind of popularized transit-oriented development in Chicago. Took the RTA a long time to understand what we were trying to do, but they finally did. And we found out the negative of transit-oriented development, and that was that deep-pocket developers were snatching up all the land around transit and building luxury apartments and displacing people who had been in those communities for generations. So then we started a project of equitable TOD. We're going to have TOD. We have to have some equity involved. So that's how my life has gone. And so it's an ever-changing job, right? So what I started with is kind of what I do now, but I do a lot more. And then there's policy around all of that. So I work on policy with the City Council, General Assembly, and with the Congress. You know what I do now?
Thank you.
Oh,
I
yeah.
do.
Okay.
Well, a tiny inkling. A drop in the bucket. Yeah.
Thank you, Jackie, for your thoughtful response. You know, it sounds like your journey at CNT began with a personal drive to engage citizens in transportation planning after witnessing the impact of decisions made without community input. Over the years, this has evolved into a broader focus, expanding to integrate transportation, air quality, community development, and equitable policy, ensuring all these elements work together to create fair, inclusive, and equitable urban spaces.
Next up, over to you, Nina. You're relatively new to CNT and to your role as well. So tell us a little bit more about your decision to join the organization
as it relates to your journey.
And I just want to acknowledge that, you know, Miss Jackie, the amount of work that you have done over time, I just hope I'm able to do a tenth of what you've been able to do. I think for me, my CNT journey kind of starts in my childhood, actually. It really, growing up in Detroit, I'm from the east side of Detroit, east side girl. And being born in a place that at the time was so devastated by the loss of its population, and kind of growing up in a place that didn't have mainstream grocery stores. So we grew our own food in our gardens, and it's a predominantly Black city. And, you know, we didn't have, you know, snow removal and things like that. We have a certain resilience about us. But as I was growing up, I was always questioning, like, huh, why does my neighborhood like look like this? And then once I got to college, understood what planning was, I realized, like, oh, it's really important for people who look like me to be at those tables in those conversations. And I always say my purpose is to make sure that the other little Ninas don't have to go through what I have to go through or what I had to go through. And so by the time I started in government with the city of Los Angeles, and then I moved to Chicago about 5 years ago, my entire purpose has always been, how do I make sure that the little Ninas of the world have access to opportunity? And in a lot of ways, I think CNT exists in order to make sure that people can thrive in the places that they're born if they choose to. And what I mean by that, if you are born in a certain zip code, we know there are certain outcomes that are attached to that. And it's because of structural inequity in how we think about land development, how we think about planning communities, that's that structural barrier. And so CNT exists so that if you're born in a certain zip code, you can stay, you can thrive, you can have access to transportation and opportunity, to jobs, to economic benefits without having to leave. And so for me, once I got into the city of Chicago and saw the impact of CNT on Chicago, its history, its legacy, Miss Jackie's history and legacy, I was really impressed and worked with CNT when I was in government. So I was in the planning department. We worked on ETOD work together. I was able to, on the government side, help to pass the ETOD policy plan. So I presented that to the CPC. And again, me and CNT were playing that inside outside game, you know, based on my values and CNT's values, how can we move the needle inside City Hall? And then we were able to update the Connected Communities Ordinance together. We were able to designate $10 million worth of ARP funding for ETOD. And that was all in collaboration with Elevated Chicago, which was members of government like myself, and then obviously partners like CNT. When the opportunity presented itself to go to any organization outside of government, I think there was no other place but CNT that was really the physical manifestation of the values that I had from birth, but also the lessons that I had learned inside City Hall, which is that you have to be able to not only think theoretically, but also implement. And CNT has mastered their ability to not only think theoretically, research, be community oriented, be people centered, but then also implement changes in the built environment that actually change lives, that move the needle. And so I'm really excited to now have been at CNT for a year and continue that work and build on that 45-year-old legacy.
That implementation is so crucial. Appreciate your candid responses. We want to turn now to the emergence of millennial leadership across the planning community. How do you think this generation is addressing some of the biggest issues facing the sector in new and different ways?
I'm squarely millennial. I was born in 1990. And I, in a lot of ways, am standing on the shoulders of the people like Jackie. It's not that we didn't exist before. It's not that these topics have not been talked about before. But I think there is a momentum with the millennial generation just because of the types of institutional effects that the world has had on us. And so I think our leadership, kind of as we're ascending into these spaces in which we're saying, you know, even the pandemic, you know, our relationship to work is different. We don't want to feed into capitalism to the point that we're working until we're dead and we have nothing to show for it, right? No life that has been lived. As millennials, we have these connected histories around the globe that we can't deny. I'm Nigerian, and I'm also the descendants of enslaved people, right? Those are both facets of me. So I can't ignore what's happening on the continent because it affects me personally. And I think we're also bringing that aspect into the work environment and saying, like, how can we do better and be better and not just think about ourselves, but think about the global economy and how we make a difference on a larger scale, which is really exciting because we're not held back by the status quo. In fact, we're, you know, our elders got us in the room and now we're redesigning the room. And so I think it's a really exciting time to see us at the helm of leadership and also to be prepared by our elders of how we're going to lead, but then also lean into our own experience and say, like, this is how we want to lead. And this is how we see, you know, really confronting these problems. And so it's been an interesting time for me, especially dealing with four generations in one workplace, which I think is a little different. Why we have our boomers, we have our Gen Xers, we have our millennials, which yes, I still got to manage millennials. And then I have my Gen Zers. And so trying to manage the expectations of all four of those generations in one workplace, I think is also unique.
Well, see, I would add on to this point. I agree with everything Nina said, but I think the generation before the millennials messed up the world. And so, you know, they now have to clean up our mess. And I think that they recognize where we made mistakes, right? That they understand that global climate change is real, all right? They understand that we need to have many modes of transportation, not just the automobile, you know? So they understand that people's ability to not have to get in a car and get a gallon of milk is important. You know, so, you know, I think the millennials and the Gen Xers are also more health conscious. They understand a lot more than, you know, those of us who preceded them understood about, again, the connection between all of these things, you know, health and transportation alternative and clean air and all the rest of that and clean water and blah, 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 it goes on. So I think that the millennials will help to clean up a lot of the mess that we made, and I am grateful for that.
Thank you, Nina and Jackie, for such rich reflections on the unique strengths of this emerging generation. Nina, you describe millennials as building on the foundation of past leaders while bringing in a more global, purpose-driven, and resilient approach to leadership. And Jackie, you highlighted how millennials and Gen Z are not only aware of the world that they have inherited, but are also motivated to address issues like sustainability, public health, and equity in ways that previous generations might have overlooked, creating a truly dynamic shift in planning and policy. Jackie, over your 40 years with CNT, you have driven major policy changes and navigated complex political landscapes. Could you share the policy change you're most proud of and walk us through how you led it to success?
Well, the one thing that I believe in is think big. So, again, starting back to that transportation bill, ICE-T, 1991, in addition to mandating citizen participation, they also had this kind of value system that, you know, transportation should serve land uses. Now, here in the Chicago area, we had two different agencies, one doing land use, one doing transportation. And how they put together a land use transportation plan is that they would do their own thing. At the end of the year, when it had to be passed by the Metropolitan Planning Organization, they would get together, smash their two plans up, and say, here is our land use transportation plan. And they had nothing to do with each other, right? And so my thought, and those of my organized groups, said, why aren't we doing it the way the federal government says we ought to be doing it? And there was no good answer to that. So we set about changing our planning agency here in Chicago. So, you know, I organized, I think it was over 110 different groups of all types, CBOs, municipalities, academics, you know, the whole gamut of the society. And we put this coalition together and we started knocking on the governor's door. And just so happened, we got a new governor who put together a new transition team, and he named as head of his transportation team a former legislator, Congressman Bill Lipinski. Bill Lipinski had been in Congress when the ICE bill was passed. So then I had a new target. Right? So I went to Congressman Lipinski and I say, hey, you wrote this bill. This is what it says. Why don't we have this in Chicago? And he said, yeah. He says, what do we need to do? I said, we need to get rid of CATS, which was a transportation agency, Chicago Area Transportation Study, and NIPSE, the Northeastern Illinois Planning, something or another, Planning Councils, I can't remember, and we need to create one new agency. So out of that came our current planning agency, which is CMAP, the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning. And so not only did we have one agency, but they also expanded their focus beyond just transportation and land use and looking at housing, looking at environmental justice, you know, a broader, like planners should have been looking at, right? So now that's what they do. Instead of, you know, having these two separate agencies just kind of smashing their plans together and say, hey, look at us, we got a plan. So I'm most proud of that because a lot of other stuff I've done has really come from the result of having created a single planning agency in the region.
Mm-hmm. And can I just add to that, Ms. Jackie? Now I sit on the board,
that's
which
true.
Right, of CMAP. So just again, how your work has affected me and given me the opportunity to affect change. And I just wanted to name that and say thank you.
Anytime.
Full circle. I love it. So, Nina, I was at an event at CNT. I hadn't been there before. And I happened to be sitting next to two women who were chatting to me. They said, we hadn't been downtown forever. We've never been in a building like this. And you will probably remember one of them. She stood up and asked a question end. And I think it was more of a comment than a question. But it was basically like, I didn't know there were these types of places were here. I didn't know these types of people were here to talk about these things. I was really moved by that. And it also highlighted what CNT is doing out in the community. And people throw that phrase around, but like literally door to door on the streets. So my question for you is, how can planners with a capital P and a lowercase p, many of whom have wrought harm over the years to a lot of communities, how can we invite people into this work and these processes, especially when they don't think they belong there, or maybe they've been flat out told they don't belong there before. Mm-hmm. What is new there? What sort of efforts is CNT doing, or other things that you would encourage planners to think about?
Yeah, I mean, I think about this a lot, especially since I decided to be a planner. And to me, being a planner is not something that is that you're not neutral. I think being a planner is a political act. In fact, calling myself a planner when the planning system has hurt me individually, right? My community at a large scale, the communities I care about at an even larger scale is intentional because I want to reclaim what it means to plan community, right? Plan with community, not plan for community. And I also think, you know, for so long, the system of planning in America is a tool of white supremacy. It is a tool to dissect, to separate, to keep the haves and the have-nots, to feed into capitalism. There's lots of isms that I could go into, but I'll keep that from you, at least in this conversation. But I think when I say that, it usually evokes an emotion, right? When I say planning is a tool of white supremacy, and I think I use that as an example, one, because I do believe it, but then two, to say we have caused harm, but we can also actively uncause harm. And the reason why working in government was so important to me, because for a lot of people, including myself, government has caused harm, has perpetuated violence, and has, without accountability, been able to continue to marginalize, again, the identities that I hold and also the identities of people I care about. So I think for planners, especially millennial and Gen Zers who are now coming to the industry, what has been really nice is seeing them understand, and as Jackie and I were talking earlier, of saying like they see the writing on the wall. They understand how these systems has failed and we're literally experiencing it in real time. And so I think if you join this profession, and I take it very part, if you join my profession, be here to do work, be here to make a difference, be here to undo harm. If you are not going to do that, you are not worthy to call yourself capital B planner, period. I take it very seriously. And also, it's like, you can't make friends when you need them, right? That's not how, that's not what community means. It means being in community and being able to do somebody a favor, drive that person to the airport, you know, show up at somebody's house when you know that they haven't eaten. That's how I grew up in Detroit. We didn't have grocery stores. Guess what? We had a garden. Everybody shared the garden. My auntie, when my mother went to prison for 4 years, my aunt took us in, and my aunt, they call her Sugar. It's like, if you needed money or you needed food, they go talk to Sugar. She's, and that's how it was. We were generous. I grew up like that, but I also grew up in a predominantly Black neighborhood. With the absence of whiteness, there was a sense of camaraderie, generosity that was not something that was, where it's like tit for tat for something.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Like, it wasn't like, I'm doing this because I want something from you.
Quid pro quo.
Yeah. Like, I'm doing it because you're in my community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I grew up. And so, like, but then when I left that that hyper local community and went to school in the white suburbs, I understood that's not how the world operated, right? And then as I went to college at Michigan, or I went to LA to go to grad school at USC, I understood, like, oh, okay, this is the crux of the issue with planning, is because we see ourselves as experts. And yes, we have some technical expertise, but really people have existed in our communities. People have said, we don't have access to these things. We are being left out in the cold. But people just have, again, ignored it because they could. And I think we're at a point in our society in which people are no longer willing to ignore it, and they like answers. And so my advice to planners is, yes, lean on the expertise that you read in books, but also you have to understand that the expertise is out there. The expertise is in people. The expertise is in Miss Dolly down the street and Jose, the kid, you know, who walks past you every day at 3:30. Like, that's where the expertise lies. And you can't separate that from your professional obligation or your professional experience of, again, how do we undo harm to make sure that everybody can thrive? And for so long, only a subsection of our country has thrived. And then I think this goes back into kind of the millennial Gen Z, where we're like, hey, you know, you told us that if we did X, Y, and Z, we were all gonna get a piece of the pie, and that's not how it's working out. And so, yeah, I think planners have to be self-aware, especially if you are someone who's not a part of a marginalized group, being self-aware and doing the work yourself. Right. Even if you are part of a marginalized group like myself, I'm very self-aware there. I am a cis het Black woman. Right. So I understand, like, oh, for trans Black women, their life expectancy is the age of 35. How can I? Right. I know it's terrible, but it's like, how can I, with my privilege, right, be able to think about people who have less privilege than me and then plan for them? Because if you plan for the most marginalized, vulnerable people of society, you are planning for everyone. Period. And so, again, approach this work with the seriousness and the severity that it needs, because we have seen in real time the outcomes of what happens when people don't.
Great.
There's not much for me to add to that.
Thank you, Nina, for such a powerful perspective. You emphasize that planning is a responsibility to undo harm by centering community voices, particularly of those historically marginalized, challenging planners to approach the work with humility and commitment to real change. This actually ties in really well with our next question, which is about execution and how can we move forward. CNT has a rich history of impactful work in transportation, equity, and sustainability. So, looking ahead, what are the top three priorities for the organization? And how do you envision guiding CNT to address evolving challenges in urban and transportation planning?
It's a good question. I think for me, coming into CNT, again, working with them, I'm like, the impact I felt, I saw, I experienced, especially being a career service, government employee opposed to an elected position. I think CNT's ability to create those relationships and say, like, how do we change these systems? How do we work together to change these systems? And So I say that to say for the last 45 years, CNT has been at the helm of major innovation in our industry. Miss Jackie, you brought car sharing and Igo to Chicago in the 1990s before Uber and Lyft were even a thing. Those weren't even words in the dictionary. And now, you know, like, and that is something that we should be proud of, that CNT and Miss Jackie should be proud of, you know, green cleaners, green roofs. These are all things that CNT was talking about. And everybody, you could tell me, Miss Jackie, I'm sure everybody was like, these crazy folks, these hippies, you know, what are they talking about? But now this is normal. Right. And so I want to keep that innovative spirit. Over the years, CNT has experienced lots of ups, but with any nonprofit, downs, right? In the changing landscape, administration changes, funding changes, funding issues, anti-DEI rhetoric, right? Especially since on our mission, we're talking about low-income Black and brown communities. And so for me, I want to be able to make sure that CNT can last another 45 years and beyond. And so that's really just about how do we make sure that as much as we are feeding to the our external partners and making sure that we're making impact externally, that we're holding those same values internally. Let's making sure, you know, our employees are being paid fairly and that we are making sure that, you know, our house is in order and that our knowledge is being documented and shared and that people are hearing about the work that we're doing, lifting our heads up. And the thing about CNT, everybody has their heads down doing the work, right? And that's good. That's important. That's why CNT is successful. And it's my job to help people to bring attention to the work that CNT does, so that we can continue to grow. I think also one of the things CNT has done a lot in its 45-year history and just thinking about what do we do best and where do we make the most impact. And so for the next year, we're going to be going through strategic kind of thinking and planning so that, again, that innovation spirit of like what's next, CNT can get back to that, especially through the pandemic, you know, where we were all now remote and, you know, kind of disconnected. I want to make sure that we're coming back together and focusing and say like, yeah, where does CNT feel as though its effort, because we're small but mighty staff of 22 people. Where is our effort and time most valuable to change the lives of the most people that we can work on our mission? And so like being more nimble about that. And then also just thinking about how do we scale kind of our pedagogy so that other cities, because they already do this, they come to CNT and say, hey, you did this in Chicago. Can you help me do this in Austin? Can you help me do this in Charlotte? Can you help me do this in LA? I want to make sure that we're prepared for that. I want to make sure that we can share our pedagogy with the most amount of people and not go into their neighborhoods and tell them what to do, but coach them. We're coaching, you know, CBOs. We're coaching career service government workers. We're coaching electeds on how to do these problems to a point where CNT may not have to be in the middle of it. It's kind of like that instead of feeding into the nonprofit industrial complex where we're only putting band-aids on problems, we want to get to the root cause of those problems so that, yeah, maybe in 100 years, CNT doesn't need to exist, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And so those, I would say those are the things that I'm working on. It's like, I don't think it's, CNT is strong the way it is currently, but we have a plan to be more sustainable and to scale our impact in a way so that, again, 45 years from now, we can look back and say like, yeah, we did that.
Mm-hmm. What's your vision?
Yeah. Jackie? Yeah. What do you think? Especially since
what are you doing the next 45 years with CNT, Jackie?
Yeah, I would love to hear like, yeah, what are your hopes and desires?
About retiring?
Yes.
No, well, you know, as I say, you know, there are always problems to be solved. And as we have this background, we have this foundation, that our ability to share, like Nina was saying, is very important. But we have to keep inventing. And as I look at my world, you know, transportation and community development, the city of Chicago is full of opportunity to advance that. And so hopefully not 45 years, but maybe in the next 5 years, we can make this part of the city's development policy that we have a priority of developing around our transit stations in disadvantaged communities so that we can have that catalytic effect of changing the entire neighborhood.
Well, guys, thank you both. It's been tremendous to hear from you. So, you know, our audience is transportation planners and beyond. I appreciate the way that you speak of all these things as being integral, right? So we, yes, we're members of the transportation planning division, but we all care about a lot of different things. And understand that the importance of being interdisciplinary and all those things. So it comes through loud and clear. Is there anything else you would like to share with an audience of transportation planners across the country?
Yeah, can I talk about something CNT has done that's not transportation, but again, related?
Yes, right? Please.
And that is, you know, the whole thing about flooding. Everybody talked about flooding, but it was always repairing flooding, right? But here in Chicago, we have urban flooding, and CNT raised that to the folks who are decision makers because they did not focus on that. In fact, we even had a session at CNT where Senator Durbin came, right? And so, you know, that started the whole process of focusing on urban planning. And our president of the Cook County Board, who was then my alderman, also came, right? So we were like that in education awareness. So as an alderman, Tony Preckwinkle learned about urban flooding. And so what is Tony Preckwinkle now? She had CNT look at the southern suburbs, which flood an awful lot, right? And CNT came up with a plan for how to deal with the flooding, right? And then she took, and once there was available funding, she's funded CNT to implement. But the thing that's important, I think, in terms of planning is that we try to convince the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District that green infrastructure was a real thing, and it could be just as important in terms of dealing with rain and runoff as their great big reservoirs. And resistant, just like the RTA was resistant to us talking about TOD, the Water Reclamation District was resistant to us talking about green infrastructure. And now they've suddenly discovered green infrastructure works. All right?
Yeah.
So another big system change for CNT. Big feather in our hat.
In addition to what Ms. Jackie just said, I would say for your listeners, use CNT as a resource. We have lots of tools that practitioners use, that advocates use, that community members use. We pride ourselves on being able to, again, take all of these different data sets and things where you're like, oh, this is so confusing. You know, government or people try to make these issues seem confusing because there's an end game there for them. And for CNT, we're trying to demystify and teach people not only how to work in the system that currently exists, but also to create and imagine the system that they haven't seen yet, that they need and deserve. So like we have our housing plus transportation index on our website that helps people think about the cost of housing and transportation, depending on where you want to develop. We have our ETOD calculator, which also does similar things. We have our urban flooding baseline tool, which is one of its kind. You won't find a similar tool out there. So please do visit our website, reach out to us, your municipalities or your organizations, your CBOs, reach out to us for guidance because we are really, again, we've set the standard over the last 45 years and we know how to help you get to where you need to go in a way that is grounded in equity, that is grounded in people, that is grounded in making sure that we're taking care of our society's most vulnerable. So yeah, reach out to us, come to our website, send us a note on LinkedIn. We're here to help you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Critical Conversations in Transportation Planning. To learn more, visit our website at transportation.planning.org.